Welcome to the Future of Supply Chain, where each episode we'll sit down with entrepreneurs, investors, and industry veterans to discuss innovation, technology, and the most exciting opportunities in trucking and logistics as we build the future of supply chain together. Be sure to head over to podcast.dynamo.vc to keep up to date with our latest content or subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. Now, let's get into the show. Here's our host, Santosh Sankar.
Hey, ladies and gents, welcome back to the Future Supply Chain Podcast. I'm your host, Santosh Sankar. And joining me today is Trey Clausen, Director of Maritime Logistics at Georgia-Pacific. Welcome, Trey.
Thanks very much, Santosh. Happy to be on the show with you. I've really enjoyed listening over the years and happy to be a guest now. Thanks.
Yeah, happy to have you on here. And, you know, Georgia-Pacific is a household name, but I'm not necessarily sure all of our listeners appreciate the breadth of the supply chain efforts that you're a part of there. Would you be able to kind of shed some light there?
Yeah, for sure. So as you said, GP is a household name. So we have brands in the US like Angelsoft, Dixie, Brawny, Quilted Northern, and others as well. And we're definitely a part of the toilet paper challenges at the beginning of 2020 with the COVID crisis. But we're not only a US based brand, but we're also as part of Koch Industries, the largest U.S. exporter of containerized ocean freight. So we're shipping to all over the world, various different products in various different stages of the manufacturing process. So pulp and tissue, cardboard, craft liner board, and so we're situated, like I said, across the globe in many different markets. So our products touch basically every country that we can ship into in the world.
And with that, like, how did you make your way into the maritime industry and the world of supply chain?
Yeah, so like every other person responsible for ocean logistics for a major shipper, I studied philosophy and urban development in undergrad. joking aside, I did go to Furman University in Greenville, South Carolina. And so I was able to see firsthand there the impact that a major manufacturer and importer like BMW could have on a community. And so I was able to see that and I knew at that point that I wanted to be involved in the international supply chain and trade world because of the tremendous global impact that trade enables in society. So when I graduated from undergrad, I tried to get in wherever I could in the international supply chain. And so before joining GP, my career had previously been exclusively working on the freight forwarding side with Flexport, Kenanoggle, and Panalpina. So as with a lot of people in the logistics world, I kind of fell backwards into the industry, but I'm just continually amazed of the breadth and scope of some of these international supply chains that we get to see.
And so today at Georgia-Pacific, what's your charge? What are you responsible for? So, you know, our founders, our listeners can get an understanding of what your purview is.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm responsible for the marine logistics capability within GP, which primarily covers ocean freight and U.S. exports with some relatively smaller air freight volume. And as I mentioned earlier, as part of Koch, we are the largest U.S. Ocean exporter. And so we're involved with ocean freight procurement, operations, freight forwarding, warehousing, trucking, the whole gamut with regards to the international supply chain.
And so, you know, you're a maritime guy. I'd love to kind of get your take on some of the current events, right? Container rates remain elevated. We don't have containers in the right spots. There's this kind of ongoing reduction of voyages. There are just fewer ships steaming these days. Kind of what's your take? Like, how should our listeners parse this? How does one make sense of it? Because you're clearly the expert here.
Yeah, so all of these issues have really been compounding on each other to create the mess that we find ourselves in the market right now. This is really a bit of a simplification, but at the beginning of COVID, during various country lockdowns, consumer demand essentially all but dried up. And the ocean carriers made the rational decision to pull vessel supply from the market. And at this stage, we saw up to about a third of the Asia to U.S. vessel capacity canceled at the end of Q2 running into Q3. And then in Q3, we saw the bullwhip effect really occur, where consumer spending skyrocketed as people, me included, just kept clicking that buy button online for consumer goods and household products. So really since July, we've been seeing a huge increase in the container rates on that sharp upward trajectory. And so surprisingly, over the last week, we saw a slight dip in the Shanghai Container Freight Index to both the U.S. West Coast and U.S. East Coast ports. However, these indices are still up about 145% and about 70% respectively over the last year. And not to be too hyperbolic with this, but this is really a staggering number. I think that the market phenomenon caught everyone a bit by surprise over the summer. And probably even more surprising is how long this bull run has lasted for the carriers. It seemed that the market would regulate following Golden Week in October. And next up, the expectation was that around the beginning of December, the market would soften a little bit. And now our next major milestone is Lunar New Year in February. Mm-hmm. But every indication so far from the carriers points to truly sustained strong volumes for major importers following Chinese New Year. And so I think that the best strategy right now is just to prepare for a range of outcomes in the market, because there's truly no telling what's going to happen. You mentioned the lack of containers and the reduction of voyages. The lack of containers really goes back to those canceled sailings that happened in the March to July timeframe, because the regular global flow of containers was disrupted. And now in Q4, we've seen about a 25% increase year over year in volumes from Asia to the U.S., while there have been labor shortages in major ports as a result of COVID. And so there's fewer people operating the vessels and operating the terminals that are absolutely packed to the brim. And so it's leading to really crazy levels of congestion. I don't know if you've seen on Twitter or LinkedIn, but there are pictures of people are taking of the port in LA and in Long Beach and also just various AIS data that shows mm-hmm. like 30, 35 vessels that are waiting to berth. And so these vessels are sitting there for up to a week or so. And so it's just leading to really crazy levels of congestion. Some ports on the East Coast are dealing with it a little bit more effectively. Savannah's done an excellent job, and Port of Mobile in the Gulf has done an excellent job here. And then the reduction of voyages, because we have all this congestion in LA, Long Beach especially, but other ports as well, the carriers really have two levers they can pull to help alleviate the congestion. So they can either add vessels to a vessel string to take up that capacity, or they can cancel sailing so that the vessels can hope to regain some level of normalcy in their schedule integrity. And what we're seeing now is that the carriers are deciding to pull that second lever, which is obviously creating some of its some additional downstream consequences. So it's a bit of an understatement to say that the market is rather dynamic at the moment. But I think that the partnerships are really a critical piece here to ensuring success in the supply chain.
And, you know, on the subject of congestion and some ports dealing with it better than others, is this the moment that might accelerate a shift away from kind of Long Beach, LA, some of the West Coast ports being the leaders, if you would, to there being a level out and an evening of the playing field and the East Coast ports kind of shining in their own light?
Yeah, so I think we're definitely seeing that, because the East Coast ports, the volume is definitely increasing, but what we've seen is that the ports have been able to deal with the increase in volume a little bit more effectively. And so as I mentioned earlier, the schedule integrity is a good deal higher on the East Coast. So manufacturers and other importers that have product that is tied to the manufacturing process or to deadlines and delivering e-commerce products to their customers, it's really critical that the importers have a level of service they can rely upon. And it's just difficult to anticipate and predict what the level of variances in a schedule will be going into LA and Long Beach at the moment. And then I think that the Gulf is doing a really excellent job too in in allowing the vessels to maintain the schedule integrity. So I think that we will start to see a shift. And I mean, it depends significantly too on where distribution centers or manufacturing locations are located across the U.S. But I definitely see a shift occurring for sure.
Is there, I guess, on that same thread of congestion, are there certain investments these ports need to start considering? Is it, you know, improving automation, increasing rail, drayage capabilities? Is there anything in and around that they should really be contemplating in order to not face this issue again down the road?
Yeah, so that's a question that hopefully was answered 10 years ago, and I think we can see some of the impacts of that. So I for sure think that infrastructure investments are a really critical component of this. So we in the U.S. we don't have the opportunity to utilize the ultra large vessels that are 20,000 plus TEUs just because of the infrastructure in the ports. And so I think that the first piece is just being able to invest in the infrastructure in the U.S. ports. So it's dredging the canals and also investing in the equipment that enables these larger vessels to come into the U.S. I think the second piece is investing in automation, like you highlighted. There are some challenges, of course, with automation because of the labor unions in the U.S., the U.S. terminals. But I think that the technology exists for automation at terminals. So the port of Hamburg, for example, is almost a fully automated port. Like I said, the technology exists for this to happen, but because of the labor unions, it's not allowed to occur. I think that investments in technology would certainly enable some of the challenges that we're experiencing right now with the labor shortages to be alleviated. And I think that rail is a really critical component. There's significant congestion on the rail as well. So I think it's just overall infrastructure investments that need to take place to hopefully prevent this level of congestion and challenge from occurring again. Honestly, I don't see a short-term fix to this. I think that the short-term fix is just a drop in demand, which also hopefully doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. So kind of shifting gears a bit here, you know, as a BCO, what's top of mind for you, your peers, as you're thinking about international logistics in 2021?
Yeah, so I think the fundamental piece here is continuing to build resilience in the supply chain. So I think it's rather clear that the black swan type events are going to happen. It's difficult to understand and anticipate and predict where these black swans are going to occur, but it's clear that they will occur. And so it's the name of the game is building resilience. I know that there's a lot written about that, so it's a bit of a trope at this point. But so short term and long term, we continually invest in our partnerships. But again, short term, we're trying to think through strategically of where the market is going to settle on the Asia to U.S. imports. That's the largest trade for the U.S. And so we see that, like I mentioned earlier, the Shanghai Container Freight Index is up rather significantly. We're approaching the next contract period for long-term U.S. import contracts. And so we're trying to understand where the market's going to settle. And then additionally, we need to ensure that we can sustain both empty container equipment and also chassis to make sure that our mills in the U.S. are able to continue manufacturing the product. So those are the major short-term challenges that we're looking at. We're trying to think of creative and innovative ways to work with our partners to help both sides to alleviate some of the struggles that we're experiencing at the moment. And then longer term, I mentioned earlier, we are continuing to have conversations with our carrier partners and terminal partners on infrastructure investments that are being made. Mm-hmm. Whether we can partner together and help influence those discussions and decisions.
So I'd be curious, like, what do you think about this integrator strategy? I think Maersk about 3 years ago came out and proposed it. We've seen CMA CGM follow. What's your take on this being like end-to-end maritime service transportation warehouse provider?
Yeah, so I think this is a really interesting strategy if the carriers are able to execute it effectively. I look at this from a value creation and value capture framework. So clearly, carriers are creating a ton of value through transporting ocean containers around the world. And until this year, it was done rather cheaply. And until this year, the major deepwater container trades were essentially a commoditized market where it was difficult for outside of a couple carriers, it's difficult for them to capture the value that they created. It's really too simplistic of a picture, but there were only really two carriers who were able to consistently generate positive results through their management of vessel and equipment utilization. So Maersk and now you mentioned CIVA too, or excuse me, CMA too. I think that they've been able to recognize that the companies that were actually capturing the value were the freight forwarders, were the warehouses, the drayage providers. I think that if the carriers are able to effectively execute on this, then it can be a real winning strategy. But the key question is, can they execute it? It comes down to technology and people. And so can the technology effectively integrate the experiences together so it's a seamless experience to the shipper and also the internal teams? And I think that that's the key question that needs to be answered, because if they can't integrate the experiences correctly, then it's essentially different companies operating separately.
Yep. That certainly makes sense. And, you know, I'm of the belief that in 7 to 10 years from now, you'll at least see Maersk in the same light as you do UPS, FedEx, DHL, because I think they've been quite savvy in writing the right type of strategic checks, as well as striking the right partnerships to build out some of that capability and connective tissue, at least on the service transportation side.
Yeah, I would. I think tend to agree with that. I think it does come down to the service level that's experienced. So I think strategically Maersk is taking really great steps. I think it comes down to what are the people with the boots on the ground enabled to do through their system, and can they reliably service the shippers and can they reliably service the customers? So I think that with an integrated experience, there's a lot to be said for technology and now enabling various different products to be stitched together. But if you can book a shipment with Maersk or CMA and have them handle it from door to door, it just makes a much more seamless experience for the shipper and also the customer as well.
Yep. Totally agree. So, you know, thinking about supply chain technology for the founders in the audience, like where would you be looking or thinking if you're looking for that next $1 billion opportunity to focus on?
So I think there's some interesting concepts that are out there right now and some ideas that could be tackled related to marketplaces. There's NYSHEX that's working on helping to solve the problem of shippers booking cargo and not showing up, and alternatively shippers showing up with that cargo and the carriers canceling the shipment. So I think that there's some interesting things that can be done to further that in marketplace, in an ocean marketplace. There's on any given week, an ocean carrier is going to have excess capacity that they need to fill. And so I think enabling a way for these carriers to fill that capacity in a reliable way, I think is a really, really interesting idea to explore. Additionally, the concept of LCL has been around for quite some time. There's a lot of questions that still need to be answered about this, but I think there's an opportunity to sell excess capacity within containers. So being able to pass on some of the benefit to shippers and also to potentially other customers as well. There's just I think the idea revolving around where is the excess capacity, and how can that that marginal capacity be sold to somebody else to create some value? I think also some innovation in documentation and financial services within global trade would definitely find some value. This definitely isn't the most the sexiest topic to discuss, but certain carriers are just starting to offer electronic bills of lading. We are in 2021, and the technology has been around for quite some time, but there's just so much regulation that goes behind all this. And if you are shipping something on an original bill of lading, that document essentially has to go either with a cargo or has to be sent separately. And if it gets lost or isn't sent, then the customers aren't able to clear cargo and have it delivered. So it's just tremendously value destructive if any error occurs in the process, which many do occur. And then additionally, letters of credit are still prevalent in various trade industries. And it ties with the previous comment about documentation. So I think that again, it's not necessarily the topic that's going to get the biggest headlines, but there's just so much value that's destroyed in those areas that I think some companies, if they're able to create interesting products, could have a real winner in the market.
Indeed. Yeah. And we actually last year had one of our portfolio companies on the podcast, James at Vector, and a lot of what they're focused on is really digitizing a lot of this paper trade documentation, so we can have a much better digital fabric. Because once it's digital, you could do a lot of improvements around the workflow. So couldn't agree more. But shifting gears here a bit about, you know, focusing on corporate innovation. For the startups out there, how does your group, the supply chain group or the maritime group, think about engagement with startups? Because Georgia Pacific has been quite productive in incorporating third-party ideas, concepts, products into how they solve problems and service their customer.
Yeah, so I'll start by saying that we absolutely love to partner together with startups. So at a fundamental level, we believe in Hayek's mental model of creative destruction, especially creative destruction brought about by creative entrepreneurs who provide society with more valuable goods or services. And really the only way for us to remain competitive in the long run is if we are continually disrupting our own businesses with the absolute best technologies, products, services, and people in the market. So to be more specific, we want to find the best companies to partner with to ensure that we can maintain that long-term competitive advantage. So we're often talking with startups in various areas of the supply chain to understand how we can work together and how we can help them and hopefully influence the products that they're bringing to market. So I think that we are very, very interested in engaging with startups for sure.
And, you know, you mentioned earlier in this conversation, one of the core principles the Coke companies operate by, especially as you think about startup engagement and partnerships, around creating that virtuous cycle of mutual benefit. Could you lean into that a bit more and help us understand that?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mouthful, but we believe that we achieve change within GP or within Coke by creating these virtuous cycles of mutual benefit through developing preferred partnerships that enables continual transformation. So, like I said, it's a mouthful. But what this means is really long-term value creation for our employees, our business partners, like our ocean carriers and forwarders, truckers, warehouses, the communities in which we operate, regulators, and anybody else that's engaged with our businesses. So this is truly fundamental to our relationships with our startup partners, in the sense that we want to ensure that both sides are creating value for each other. So as such, we're really comfortable with taking on certain levels of risk if that means that we can partner with companies who will help us continually transform and disrupt our business. And we expect that these startups will help us understand ways to improve our business. And we expect that they will continually tell us what they need from us in order for them to be successful, in order for them to continue growing in the market. Because really the only way that we are able to sustain these long-term competitive advantages is if we're finding new ways to do business, new ways to engage in the market, and we think that one of the most successful avenues of pursuing that is partnering together with startups who have the best and the brightest, and really the incentive to create new products and new services that can help us out.
That certainly makes sense. It sounds like a great principle and kind of underpinning in order to kind of attract the best partners, but equally work together with them for the long term. But with that, Trey, we covered a bunch of ground here. I am super thankful for you joining us here, especially at the start of the year, and look forward to seeing what the world of maritime logistics has in store for us as we navigate through 2021.
Yeah, fun ride ahead. Thanks a lot, Santosh. This was fun. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a 5-star review and tell us what you liked. And be sure to head over to podcast.dynamo.vc to keep up to date with our latest content or subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. Until next time.